Hello.
And welcome
to My Favorite Murder.
That's Georgia Hartstark.
Thank you. That's Karen Kilgariff.
You're welcome. We are proud to be here with you this week.
Mm-hmm.
Talking about true crime.
Yep.
Talking about whatever the fuck we want.
Yeah. Maybe we'll recommend a book or two for your reading pleasure.
What? Maybe we'll have an anecdote about a wonderful thing. Maybe there's correction corners.
Ooh.
Up the wazoo.
Always and forever.
Should I kick off with the emergency correction corner?
Oh, shit. I didn't know we had one.
This is an emergency.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Okay. What did we do?
We can actually blame it on home gym because...
Oh, yeah. Fuck. This is an emergency.
It's an emergency.
Oh,
you cannot put out a grease fire with flour. You cannot.
Now, you've been listening. Or if you haven't, please don't try to put out a... We've been giving false information. Dangerous, false, spreading lies.
Apparently, my dad's been retired long enough from the San Francisco Fire Department that he doesn't know how to put fires out anymore. I think it's sad. You think it's funny. Whatever. But I got lots and lots of tweets with people who are related to firemen, who are sitting next to one at the time, who
went to kindergarten and learned some basics.
I always just thought it was a... I was happy to take his information and be like, this is what I also have already known.
Sure.
This is the way families grow up ignorant.
If home gym doesn't know, then who among us is to know?
But I will defend him by saying that he did do that thing where he said, I think so. And maybe it was the flower that was getting him. But
well, that's all you can expect on My Favorite Murder is a solid, I think so, with a question mark at the end.
We're setting you, the listener, up to help us. We need you to help us. We're trying to get you to participate.
This is an interactive podcast. This is a choose your own adventure podcast.
This is an intervention podcast where someone's going to walk in and say, enough is enough.
Your stove's on fire.
Your show's burning down. Don't you care? And then that's when George and I grab hands and run into the sea. Only use salt, baking soda, or a wet towel if you're even going to attempt to put out a grease fire.
Yeah.
Obviously, fire extinguisher is your best bet, but those are hard to use.
Someone told me, I read online too, that those, like, there's a green bottle one that's specifically for grease fires, and then the red ones are for firefighters.
They might cause the same problem. Here's the thing. Stop making bacon and fucking around.
And stop making your favorite murder podcasters your firefighters and your information about.
And stop being mad because I pose as a firefighter and then get mad at you when I give you the wrong information.
Stop giving us good information. We're going to fight it every step of the way. Well, that's good
to know. Hopefully we cleared that up for you.
Let's all look up, everyone right now, look up ways to put out fires. That's it. You know how to get red wine out of a dress. You should also know how to put out different kinds of fires.
How about this? It's all salt. The answer is salt for everything. It's getting red wine out of a dress. It's putting out fires. It's rubbing into wounds, whatever
it's
you need.
Making your food delicious.
My favorite thing was people sending me pictures of other people's notes from their phone. Like it literally, or like a part of a Facebook post where I'm like, could we get a source on this? If my dad's not sure, why should I believe your iPhone note that just has a written list? That's still not a better source.
Okay. Here's another listener generated piece of advice, of safety advice. Randomly, great, that I was going to read, and it kind of goes along with it. So on Instagram, someone whose name is A_Nulf, they were doing a deep Reddit dive about the Delphi murders, which I covered a while back. And the piece of advice they gave is apparently you can set up your phone so that if you push the power button twice, and said it's probably different depending on your phone, but there's a button on everyone's phone. And if you press it, the phone will take a picture of what's in front of you, behind you, and a 5-second video. And then all of that will get sent to your emergency contact. So like if you're my emergency contact, you'll know I'm in distress. It'll send you that information so you have it in case something goes wrong.
And that's an app or that's already on the iPhone?
It's already a feature of your phone, which I want to try, but I'm not gonna. And I guess you probably have to set up an emergency. Steven's laughing. Is this just total bullshit?
No, I have no idea. I've never heard of this before.
Steven, is this a creepy pasta safety tip?
Let's do it. But I don't think I have anyone set up as an emergency contact, so I don't know if it'll work. What if it just sends it to my ex? Because I haven't set up.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, for real, I was just like, who would my emergency contact be? That's a sad moment.
It's me.
Yeah, but would you come over like 3 a.m.?
No, I'd be like, she must have sat on her phone.
Vince, go check.
I try to call you. Like, she's not picking up. I'm just going to. But it's like,
I'm going to make my neighbor, my neighbor that I just met recently, my emergency contact.
Can you be my best friend and my emergency contact?
Can you pick me up at the airport?
What else? Yeah. So that's, I think that finding out your emergency settings on your phone is probably a really good thing to have.
That's a good thing to. Right? Oh, maybe we go into, speaking of emergency settings, of safety,
yeah.
Lots and lots of people, we all went into this week. This was something that happened on the internet, and no one missed it. No, not one person missed it, and not one person didn't send it to me. Samantha Hartso is her name on TikTok, who felt wind blowing from behind her mirror.
Yeah.
Took her mirror down only to discover there was an opening.
Her medicine cabinet behind her. Yeah. Her medicine cabinet mirror.
Right.
Yeah.
Takes it off the wall in her apartment. Her roommates watch her go laughingly. Good job. So she goes through the wall and there's an entire empty apartment hidden. And she starts walking in it. And mind you, and this is the thing that, like, I was talking with my friends last night about. It wasn't like a space where she could, like, just kind of bend down and go in and grab.
Yeah.
It was like she had to contort herself to go through the mirror hole and then was walking freely around an apartment, the contents of which she did not know.
Yeah. A huge, looked like abandoned apartment. But here's the thing. I knew that was a thing, that they build them like that, because my sister used to live in this, like, old, you know, I think it was like just pre-war apartment in Culver City, and had that same issue, because every morning the person who shared a wall with her, they would be getting ready on either side of the medicine cabinet, and then there would just be, you could see them, there would be like a little gap, and they'd sometimes make eye contact.
Ew.
Like the smallest gap, you could just see a sliver of each other's eyes, and they'd both be getting ready. And then there would just be this awkward moment of like, do we acknowledge that we're basically roommates right now?
Yeah.
And you could, just take out the mirror and fucking go into each other's apartments. You're not safe anywhere. There's nowhere you're safe.
It's the idea that with a big smile on her face and like with TikTok in her heart, she went into a question mark space and then kind of just fucked around. When she went down those stairs, I was like, this is not going to end well.
No. You think what you're love the safety of TikTok, but
yes,
no,
it no. And she but she did lock that door when she got down to the bottom of the stairs. Yeah. This is a TikTok recap podcast, but everybody's. Congratulations, Samantha, because you were the character of the week on Twitter, and not in a bad way. In a way where everybody
we were
was
all
like,
scared for you. We were there with you. You're very brave.
I thought I was very proud, but at the same time, like, why are you doing this?
It ended well.
A hammer's not enough.
No.
If you're going to go into a space like that.
Because even it could be like there could be a squatter there who's like, stop filming me and angry.
The Blair Witch could be there with her back turned in the corner, right? And then you're like, wait, there's someone in the corner with their back turned.
I'm going to go
scariest
tap on her shoulder.
Is.
Ma'am?
Yeah.
Ma'am, are
Excuse
you okay?
Me, I'm the girl from TikTok. The end. She comes back. Her eyes are weird. She starts eating her roommate.
Good for her. I'm happy
good
for her.
Good for her. And good for her if she does.
I'm happy for her.
I am so
Samantha.
Happy.
Congratulations, Samantha.
Congratulations,
Samantha.
Even the
New York Post picked up your story. It's pretty sweet.
It was a good one. And it was like, it was really, she just was basically like, you know what? We're in quarantine.
Oh, yeah.
This is happening to me. I'm going to create some content for all of us.
Yeah. And it blew up.
She did it.
We love an internet success story. We love a viral TikTok success story. That's for.
I hear she's getting a DIY show on HGTV now.
Good for her.
Samantha and her hammer.
I love it. Okay, what else?
Well, I made a chicken.
A whole one?
Yes, didn't I show you?
Congratulations.
Ooh, I'm going to text you this picture right now.
Is it roasted and broasted?
It was roasted. The Barefoot Contessa taught me how. And I made a tweet in it. But honestly, because my sister, anytime I ask my sister how to do something, she's like, just look up Behind a Garden. She knows how to make everything. There's always videos. Like, that's Laura's advice across the board.
I agree with her.
Yeah. And in this chicken roasting video,
oh, she's the best.
It starts with Ina Garten looking in the camera and going, I could do this in my sleep. And I was like, whoever you, that's what I said. That's hilarious. Did you see the tweet?
No, I'm not literally Twitter.
I did that quote and wrote, yes, bitch. And then proceeded to watch the video truly like 10 times because she's so good at it and soothing. And it so really soothing. Was so simple.
Did she put the butter under the skin, which is the grossest thing to do, but it really does make it better. Does she do that?
We basted the top of the skin. We didn't do underneath. But my mom used to do that to the Thanksgiving turkey.
Yeah, she did.
Big pats of butter underneath.
Yeah.
Stuffing it in there.
Let's with take a look.
Long fingernails.
Ew!
Shoving like butter and spices
no,
under
typhoid
dead
Mary.
Poultry skin.
Don't do that.
Well, she had clean hands,
oh,
my mom.
Good. I'm sure she did. I didn't
just
mean to,
a nurse.
I didn't mean to insinuate your mother was filthy.
Hey. Okay, wait. Here's my chicken final form. It was really fun and easy. Boom. Check that out.
Whoo, Karen! This makes you honorary Jew.
Really? Why?
Because we Jews are great at roaster chicken. This is like...
Is that true?
Uh-huh. Look at you even tied up its little legs.
I found some string in my drawer that I saved Ooh. Like a weird little pack rat. And I was like, I have twine.
Is that cauliflower?
Hell yeah.
That's innovative.
That's all the vegetables I had. I didn't have any good root vegetables, so I just threw in onions and cauliflower.
That's all you need. It's beautiful. I wish I could have some right now. I'm hungry.
Thank you. I have so much. The only problem is that I now have, I'm living in chicken.
Right.
It's ridiculous. It's everywhere all the time. But it seemed so intimidating for so long. And I think it's just one of the side effects of quarantine, which I am grateful for, which is I put aside all of my cooking negative talk and just started actually doing it. Like, who cares if you mess it up?
That's
You're
great.
Here anyway.
Yeah. Well, good. I didn't make it. Vince made corned beef and cabbage.
Whoa.
We're all about the slow cooker in the house.
Oh,
in this
good.
House.
Nice.
You should bust that out. Okay. Oh, I got an air fryer because you guys all told me I had to get one, but I haven't used it yet. But fucking,
they're
it's going
to
happen.
Rage. People really love those things, those air fryers.
Apparently, I'll try anything.
Yeah. This is just after, it's not really a correction because this was more the way this listener let me know about this really felt more like a celebration. Plus, their name on Twitter is Mad Mac Murderino.
Great.
And they said, almost peed my pants listening to today's episode when you talk about Yara Greyjoy going up against the detector inspective. That's what I said.
I didn't notice that at all. Yeah. I saw that.
That's when I get really excited because you know that thing you do when you're talking and thinking at the same time where you're like, oh, what's the word I'm about to say? Because in England, they don't call them, this.
Yes.
And then I'm like, what do they call them? I watch so much British TV.
So
I know
smart.
What they call them.
Yeah.
And then, of course, that's what I say.
Well,
she wrote, played it back
right.
six times. Right. Sounded good to me. Played it back six times to make sure I wasn't just mentally fatigued. Thank you for the joy. Spoken word dyslexia is real.
Hell yeah.
And then she did hashtag it me. And we know that because it happens quite
constantly
when you do a podcast.
Well, I feel
for
like
5 years
when you have when you have 5 years of yourself recorded, there's going to be a lot. And you know, I have some classic ones that I still use to this day
that legendary.
So it's going to happen. And hopefully
what's the big one that I can't think of right now,
Steven? What was it we called that episode?
Proclivity.
Which I now use. It works. It works in many.
It just works.
I refuse to admit that it's wrong. Oh, I have a couple pieces of news.
Oh, what is it?
Things that are things in the news.
Oh,
one of them you might have sent me. Oh, you did. That the Kendrick Johnson case that I covered. Steven, if you can find out what episode that was that I covered it, where the young high school boy was found dead, rolled in a gym mat at his school. Yep. and it was ruled accidental. I don't have a lot of information, but it's being reopened. It was 2013, yes. And the case is being reopened, which was like all his parents wanted, because there were some issues with other kids at school that he was fighting with. There was some missing time on the surveillance camera at school, and then some like evidence burned. So it was really suspicious. So even if they just look into it and found that there was wrongdoing in the way that it was investigated, you know, I think there's room for that, just, at least.
Yes. Just the idea that it's being, like, just everything's being analyzed and looked at is very good news.
Happy to hear that. When was that, Stephen?
It was in April of 2020, and it was episode 216, April 2nd.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. So we'll keep our eye out for more information on that.
Oh, and then Stephen sent us this, that Elizabeth Banks is set to direct the bear-centric thriller about the cocaine bear.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I'm just happy it's happening. I
think today I got 50 tweets about that.
Okay. See, I'm not on Twitter, so I don't see this.
Yeah.
Cool. What else? Do you have anything in that genre?
I just finished a book. I want to brag because I finished a book.
Congratulations.
Look, it's not, I have a hard time.
No, I mean it.
I literally have to drag my finger along like that little 2-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah.
So the author, Elena Ferrante, who wrote My Brilliant Friend.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a series on, I believe, HBO.
Yeah.
She has a new book called The Lying Life of Adults. And I loved my lovely friend, Jamie Filippini, who is what I used to call my normal friend because she wasn't a stand-up comic and she wasn't in show business. And she's been my friend for a long time. And she just sent me this book and she's like, I got it. And I'm like, wait, I got this weird book. And then she texted me and she's like, I just finished it. I think you're going to like it. It was just like one of those things. Where I'm like, I love it. Surprise quarantine gifts is the best feeling.
Yeah.
It's a teenage girl who's changing over from being kind of an innocent only child where her two parents, like, it's just this family that she is regular. And she goes through an adolescence thing. But it's kind of that thing of like, as you grow up as a girl and you get an idea in your head about yourself, and then you start acting based on this truth that you've made up about yourself.
Is it current day?
Yes, I believe so.
Or ish.
Yeah.
That's so funny. I'm reading a similar book about a young woman, growing young woman who's coming into herself.
What's it called?
It's called The Book of Longings. And it's by Sue Monk Kidd, K-I-D-D, who I've mentioned before. Beautiful poetic writer. She wrote The Invention of Wings and The Secret Life of Bees. So this one is about a young woman coming into her adulthood, but it takes place in the first century in Israel.
Ooh.
And she's going to be like fucking given away into marriage, but she's so smart and worldly and like learning about God. She's Jewish, and this is a spoiler, but not really, because it's what it's about. She meets a boy who's like under her in class, like in her class ranking, but he is an outcast from his town of Nazareth, where he's from.
The J-Man?
They fucking have a meet cute and fall in love, and his name is
it
Jesus. It's so, I was not expecting it, because I was like, I'm just gonna not even read I'm just gonna listen to it because I love her Sue Monk Kidd's writing. And then I was like, hold on, his mother's name is Mary, hold on, like I didn't figure it out.
But that is the ultimate.
So beautiful. And I, you know, I'm not, it was, it's just really lovely and like heartfelt and right,
that's so great. So this is the title of this book is Jesus's First Girlfriend.
Jesus's First Love. It's called The Book of Longings.
It's called Who I Was Seeing at the Time. You know when people do that where like my girlfriend, they're telling you a story and they're like my girlfriend at the time.
Right.
Where you're it's not now.
Because I think people are like now coming out the like Jesus had a wife. Like that's a thing
I got. How dare you?
Maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe you don't put I'm putting flour on the grease fire flame.
You are
religion.
This is the perfect. No. You know what you're thinking of, that you're right, but you're thinking of my favorite book ever written, The Da Vinci Code, which is Mary Magdalene was Jesus's wife. Oh. And that the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah.
No, not the Ark of the Covenant. The
Noah's Ark.
Holy Grail.
The
Holy Grail is actually Jesus's child. That it's a symbol. Whatever.
Okay.
So basically there's a bloodline of Jesus's family.
Whoa.
On earth.
Okay.
Is the
All
idea.
Right. Well, I don't know anything about that.
Well, I would love for you to watch Da Vinci Code 1 and 2 with me.
Is it good?
And really, we'll just take a journey through Tom Hanks making terrible hair decisions.
All right.
I have another book recommendation, but I took this one from our friend of the family, Rachel McCarthy James, who is the co-author of my favorite book, The Man from the Train. Mm-hmm. If you haven't read The Man from the Train and you like true crime, it is.
Stop yelling at me.
A mind blowing. I just want to reread it. But she just recommended a book. So this is actually not a recommendation, but this is the book I'm picking to read after this because I just finished the other one. An author named Elon Green, who's a writer, a very accomplished writer. He wrote it's a true crime book called Last Call, A True Story of Love, Lust, and Murder in Queer New York.
Ooh.
And it's the story of the Last Call killer.
That's right.
From the 90s.
Yeah.
Yes. And I cannot wait to read it. It's the reviews are amazing. And Rachel McCarthy James recommended it today on Twitter and was basically like, this is going to be amazing. Well, but then did a thing which we always love. She linked it to her local independent bookstore.
Great.
So if you can buy books from independent bookstores when you're buying your new book, do that.
Beautiful.
That's the best move you can do.
I love that.
This corner completely provided by Rachel McCarthy James, lifted entirely from her Twitter feed.
But with credit.
Yes, but with credit.
And I still need to read The Man from the from the Train or Around the Train, In the Train, On the Train.
From. Yeah.
Okay, I get it.
He's from that train.
Hey, choo-choo.
He killed everybody.
Choo-choo.
With an axe.
Stab, stab. Axe, axe.
Unbelievable.
I can read it.
Okay. Should we do a little news, a little business?
Hey, let's do a little exactly right corner because we have a business, a growing business, a startup, some would say.
A startup. And you know, when people in the tech industry are going to seed a good idea, they always combine elements, which is what we did on Do You Need a Ride?
Oh.
So it's Do You Need a Ride this week has Banana Boy Kurt Brownler. It's a fun, great episode where we chatted nonstop. Obviously, that you're forced to, but we liked it. We had a great time. We laughed our asses off.
Okay, so that's a crossover. And then Lady to Lady, the podcast on Exactly Right Network, has friend of the family Fortune Feimster on, who's
classic.
Just an incredible talent. If you haven't watched her comedy special, Sweet and Salty, you're missing out. So that's all in the family, as one
yep.
would say.
And over on I Saw What You Did, of course, Millie and Danielle are continuing the Is It Good or Was I Horny movie bracket. So definitely they're going over all the movies that affected you as, you know, a youngster. Go check that out and see if you have anything to say or any way to participate in that. It's a really, really funny
or just watch
thing.
Along. It's really funny.
Yes.
And that's on their Instagram is I Saw Pod. So you can follow along there. You can vote yourself if you want. And they also have incredible new merch out that we highly recommend to support them and to fucking look cool as shit while you're doing it.
And to wrap it down, this week on the Purrcast, Stephen Ray Morris and Sarah, they have a friend of the fam, author Maureen Johnson on. And you might know Maureen because this was a while ago. This was like a couple years ago. She dedicated one of her books. She's a very accomplished author. She dedicated one of her books to all murderinos. Mm-hmm. And then in the first printing, they left out the R. So it said to all mutterinos. And when it came out, she posted it to us and it was on Twitter. And she was like, you know, wrote this whole thing. And then I DM'd her and I was like, I hate to do this, but I just want you to
from
know
the
before.
Source. From the yeah. source.
Like, I just want you to know first and like, just rip the Band-Aid off.
And then, so if you're following along in the mini-sodes, we've been doing some stories about, I guess we only did one story about gravestone cleaning, the art of gravestone cleaning.
And no, two, like, because you did it this week as well.
No, this week and then last week I suggested a Instagram, I think. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Whatever.
I mean, the topic's been brought up.
Yeah. Let's just go. Yeah. So we thought it'd be fun to have a callback to we have a gravestone inspired design for My Favorite Murder that we've been selling. And so we refilled those items. So it's like a cool Victorian looking gravestone that says My Favorite Murder on it. And you can get that at myfavoritemurder.com in the store. There's also some cool extras with that design if you're part of the fan cult.
And we also got, if you were waiting for the Here's the Thing, Fuck Everyone mugs, they are back in stock.
Yes. So the fucking favorite.
They have been returned.
There.
So yeah. The merch is there. There's lots of mugs. There's also the fucking hooray mug.
There's so much cool shit.
That looks like balloons.
That
it's
is my
cute.
My joy is every time Denton shows us new designs and then lets us pick out what they're called blanks. Like, do you want it on this kind of shirt or this kind of shirt? Do you want it on this tank top or do you want it on a towel? Or do you want it on a koozie? It's like the most fun for me. So please check that. Even just look at it and be like, yeah, George is right. This is fucking cool.
It's good.
It is good.
And we have some great artists and designers.
We
and
do. I'm proud of it.
It's very fun.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. So I'm going this week. And I got this. So we got this info. Speaking of exactly right, Erin Brown, our social media manager, who I've known for a very long time, she wrote, you know, what she does in her little bio and then said that the way she got into true crime was when she was little and saw the made for TV movie of this story. And I'd never heard of it. So I went and found it. And I'm going to do the story of Teresa Saldana.
Oh, my God.
I figured you'd know all about it.
Also, this made for TV movie was, I think I probably saw it when I bet you it's like 14, 15.
Yeah. I think she said she saw it when she was 8 and then like lost her mind. So
it's unbelievable.
Okay. Yeah. So I didn't know the story at all. So I went down this rabbit hole of it. I got information from an article by Sharon Lynn Pruitt for Oxygen, Kale Haverfold for Goliath, Cheryl Eddy for Gizmodo, Diane Klein for WAPO, Andrew Limbong for NPR, Carol Baker for UPI, theshaderoom.com by Christina Calloway, New York Times, and Wikipedia. And I also watched the made-for-TV movie, of course.
Yeah.
Which you can find on YouTube. So Teresa Saldana is born August 20th, 1954 in Brooklyn at just 5 days old. She's adopted by Davina and Tony Saldana. At 12 years old, she starts taking acting classes. And she is good. She lands a handful of off-Broadway plays as she grows and then starts to book small roles on TV shows and in films. And then her career grows and she starts seriously attracting notice after she's cast in the 1978 Beatlemania film, I Want to Hold Your Hand. Did you see that? No.
Well, it's not the original. It's like was it like a made-for-TV movie?
I think it's
something?
like a TV movie about Beatlemania.
Yeah, yeah.
Then in the early 80s, so she starts landing significant roles and she's getting bigger and bigger, including in the revenge thriller Defiance, in which she plays a nice girl in a tough neighborhood. And then her career takes a giant step forward when she's cast in the Martin Scorsese film Raging Bull, a fucking classic. She plays Joe Pesci's wife, Lenore LaMotta, who's also the sister-in-law of Robert De Niro's character. So these are big roles with big up-and-coming actors. That's like, I'm sure she's stoked.
I mean, this is, we're going into peak Scorsese area where he had been, I bet you when she got that part in Raging Bull, she was fucking...
Yeah,
she partied. She went out for some champagne with her friends.
Yeah.
I mean, that would have been a really big deal I mean, obviously.
Right.
With those actors and that director.
Yeah. That's amazing. Epic. And he always casts, like, he seems like he keeps the same actors in his, like, wheelhouse. So I'm sure she was like, this is it. These two films bring her career success, but unfortunately, they also bring the attention of a 47-year-old drifter living in Aberdeen, Scotland, named Arthur Richard Jackson. Unbeknownst to Teresa, Jackson stalks Saldana for 18 months, and he even hires a private investigator to find out her personal information. He's able to get the unlisted phone number of her mother, and then he calls her mom, pretending to be Martin Scorsese's assistant, and tells the mom, who, of course, does, you know, I think they're in New York still. They have no idea about the business. Tells her, just doesn't understand how it works, that there'd be no reason why the assistant.
The way it came out, though, was in New York, they don't understand about business. Or it's like, I don't know. I feel like that's one of those cities where there's a bunch of people who do understand.
You know, I'm guessing they live in the suburbs in the made for TV movie.
You know, those hicks in New York, they don't know how business works.
They're all concentrating on Broadway. What do they know from Martin Scorsese?
They don't know how the typical office works.
Yeah. Phones? They don't know phones. So the mom gets the call, and in the movie she's like, typical mom, New York mom. It's not like she would know about these things, that Martin Scorsese's assistant wouldn't be calling the mom to be like, hey, can I get the phone number and address of Teresa? There's this script that Martin Scorsese needs filled right away, like how you talk about it's an emergency, and that's tricks people into doing things they wouldn't normally do.
Yep. It's a rush. You have to do it right
exactly.
now.
Exactly.
I'm official. I'm important.
Right.
You have to do it right.
Says they're shooting a film in Europe. They need an actress replacement right away. What's Teresa's phone number? So she gives this man Teresa's phone number. And in an interview with Larry King, Teresa Saldana later says, as soon as I got the call from my mom, because the mom was like, I think I fucked up immediately. As soon as she got off the call with her mom, her manager, Selma Rubin, called a minute later to tell her that she had been getting some weird calls, too. And it appeared to be from the same person. And so then Teresa says, I called the police, but at that time, they didn't have themselves on the alert for things like this. They thought it was just nothing. They thought it was a fan.
Yeah.
So
not.
A fan doesn't try to get your phone number, right?
I was just kind of thinking, it's that thing, this kind of stuff where it's like predatory behavior, and it's definitely red flags. And it's the kind of thing when you read these stories all the time and
right.
you talk about these stories, this is the stuff that you watch, and it always leads up to a thing that you know is coming.
Mm-hmm.
And it just would be great if like the authorities would adjust to that instead of it being like, sorry, we can't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, just like, but this isn't normal phone calls. I mean, this specific
totally.
Scenario, they wouldn't be able to do anything, but it is that kind of thing. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll tell you all
we'll
about,
talk about it.
So meanwhile, this guy, Jackson, scrapes together enough money to head to the United States with his intent being to find Teresa Saldana. So on March 15th, 1982, in the middle of the day, as Teresa, she's now 27 years old, she leaves her West Hollywood apartment to go to a music class, and she's approached by a man that she doesn't know. And she's already on high alert because of these phone calls. The man politely asks her, it's the middle of broad fucking day in her neighborhood, excuse me, are you Teresa Saldana? As soon as Teresa replies yes, Jackson immediately pulls out a 5.5-inch hunting knife. Ugh. And starts stabbing Teresa. He stabs her 10 times in the chest, the arms, and the legs, using enough force that he bends the blade and punctures one of her lungs. 23 people witness the attack. That's how brazen it is. It's not even like he's trying to be secretive at all. Like, he's
no.
just out.
And that's not to be this person, but in the TV movie, that's the thing that's very upsetting that I remember the most, is people are standing there screaming.
Yeah.
Like, what? Right. Like, there's like, it's crazy. It's like, it's just so bizarre.
Totally.
It's like something that, yeah.
There's no forethought to it. It's like this predator, exactly how you said. So 23 people witness, including a passing delivery man named Jeff Fenn, F-E-N-N. He hears Teresa screams. He stops his truck and runs to her aid. He fights Jackson off and holds him until the police arrive. Like, what a freaking hero.
Hero.
Not that the other people aren't, like, were going to do anything, but, like, you know, jumping in, it's like, it's just...
That's that first responder vibe of a person that you, not just anyone can do it.
Totally.
Not just anyone has that. It's like we talk about flight or fight or whatever. And that's a person who is just like, I go in when stuff like this happens.
Instinctual. Exactly. Yeah. So the paramedics take Teresa to nearby Cedars-Sinai Hospital. And by this time, her heart has actually stopped and she's rushed into the ER where she gets heart and lung surgery and 26 pints of blood. Which miraculously save her life. And she needs a 4-month hospital stay in order to recover from the whole ordeal, which is like, shows you how fucking detrimental it was to her body. Yeah. 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, Jackson is convicted. I'm not going to go through the whole fucking trial, but he's convicted of attempted murder and inflicting great bodily injury. But he's only sentenced to 12 years in prison, which is the maximum sentence in the early 80s in California for these crimes. So while he's in prison, Jackson continues to threaten Saldana. He sends a letter to a Geraldo producer and details his plan to, quote, assassinate her, saying, quote, I am capable of alternating between sentiment and savagery, romance and reality. So he's definitely, you know, evaluated psychologically, and there are huge glaring issues with his mental health. The same month, he writes another letter saying that Saldana, telling her she's marked for death. So he's basically given free access from the prison to continue to harass and threaten her despite his vicious attack and conviction. He's still able to send out these letters unchecked. By 1989, just 7 years into his sentence for attempted murder, Jackson's already scheduled for parole and will be let off on good behavior. Despite the fact that he continues to send these letters and to Teresa and other news outlets throughout his entire sentence, and he refuses psychiatric counseling treatment while in prison and confesses while incarcerating to murdering a man during a London bank robbery 2 decades earlier. Apparently, good behavior includes those things, which is just so absurd. Like, say what it's really for is that you don't give a shit. You know what I mean?
Well, also just that kind of thing where this isn't, we're not talking about the average inmate here.
Right.
It's a person who stalked and then victimized a woman and went to jail for
attempted to murder
a savage
her.
Attack.
Yeah.
And continues to victimize a woman and continues to promise harm to her.
Yes. And
sure. Then they're like, and how about some parole? Like, that
for
doesn't
good
make
behavior.
Sense.
It's, yeah, it doesn't it's make insulting. Sense.
The point of parole is proving you have been rehabilitated.
Exactly.
So I don't get, but this is also from the 80s, right?
Yes. And there's more. So let's get into that.
Yeah, yeah.
So Saldana, when she finds this out, is shocked, and she's told there's nothing anyone can do about it, that his threats are looked at as, quote, just words by the prison officials.
But they're not just words if he already acted on
them.
Is there? Okay.
And just words after you've acted on in the same way should be a problem. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a problem not to be in jail.
Right.
So
yeah,
it should be like that. He's not just the kind of person that's going to say stuff. He's going to do stuff.
Exactly. So clearly he's not rehabilitated in any way. So now Teresa's 34 years old. She's 6 months pregnant and she fears for her life, of course, saying, quote, this man is going to kill me if someone doesn't help. That is the truth. She begins advocating against his release and starts shining a light on the fact that the system is flawed in protecting people from violent criminals. This is further enforced by a 1985 state law being overturned that would have kept him incarcerated beyond his release date. On a year-by-year basis, if the state psychiatrist thought he was still a violent threat. And those psychiatrists came forward and said they wholeheartedly did think he was still a violent threat, but it didn't matter at that point because that law was overturned. And Jackson actually does end up serving additional time after endless appeals. Saldana said, quote, and then even when I got the letter about the repeal, they said they weren't going to take the repeal as the final thing. They would be that would be appealed. But in the last couple of weeks, all we got were very, very tactic and very, very specific and serious words to the effect of prepare yourself because he's coming out on June 15th and there's nothing we can do. Eventually, the court sides with Saldana and Jackson receives an additional 5 years and 9 months for his death threats. So finally, he gets punished and they take those fucking seriously.
Yeah.
At the sentencing, Superior Court Judge James Baskew tells Jackson, quote, I find you to be an extremely dangerous person. It is my opinion you are a danger to yourself. You are a danger to Miss Saldana, and clearly you are a danger to everyone around you. The deranged Jackson says the sentence is, quote, a declaration of war.
What?
To the judge.
To the judge.
Yeah. And then judge is like, double what I just said, please.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. This is not a sane person. No. And it's not a person that's in their right mind.
No.
A judge is literally sentencing you.
Yeah.
And you're just like, it's on, bitch.
Yeah.
You're just like, here's the answer. Guess who's going to win this?
Yeah.
Guess who's going to win this, dummy?
In 1996, Jackson is extradited to England for the murder that he admitted to in prison, the bank robbery murder. He's found not guilty, but he's placed in a psychiatric hospital where he dies in 2004 of heart failure. Well, all right. So in 1984, Teresa makes the decision to relive her traumatic ordeal by playing herself in the made-for-TV movie Victims for Victims, the Teresa Saldana story, which makes the made-for-TV movie, as we were talking about, so real and gut-wrenching. And like, she fucking played herself.
Okay, I didn't remember that.
Oh!
So I remember the movie. I remember that scene. And so now I'm like, that scene was so creepy or whatever. It's like, yeah, because she was in it. Because it was basically like the ultimate reenactment. I mean,
she was reliving her exact trauma.
Also, can I just say that I remember the commercials for that made for TV movie? Like,
were they terrifying?
As they built up to that. It was because the story was in the news, yeah. And the story was kind of like everywhere.
Yeah, it happened in 82 and it's 84 now. So I'm sure yes, it was just as big.
It was around all the time. And then it basically, because I know she did obviously press and stuff like that. Yeah. But it became about her going, yeah, a minute, I'm taking it back. This is my story.
Yeah.
This happened to me. And I want, and it was just like a thing that was very consistent in that part of my childhood. Just like watching her be like, yeah, I'm taking it back. Like this enough, like people need to care about victims.
That's so badass. Yeah, it's incredible. And watching it, you're just like amazed by her. So, in fact, in the movie, a doctor and paramedic from her attack played themselves as well in the emergency room scenes.
Did the that's amazing. I love that.
Yeah,
I love like a detail. I was thinking you were going to say that the delivery man played himself.
No, but he comes back into the story. So
okay,
I'll tell you about him in a minute. Miss Saldana said, quote, working on the film released a lot of tension for me because you want to ask the question like, did it you could have re-traumatized you very easily, yeah. You know?
Yes.
So she actually said working on the film released a lot of tension for me as we shot. I felt elated and creative because she's an actress, you know. I felt that I was capable of anything. How many people are offered the opportunity to go back in time and relive a traumatic experience, but without any of the physical or emotional pain that they felt the first time?
Yeah.
It's almost like exposure therapy.
I hope there was, I'm sure there was, but like someone on set.
Yes.
So it wasn't just like.
Yeah, you know, gotta hope
we're back in five, you know,
right,
what I mean,
yeah.
Like but I would imagine if she's this together that they
probably, you know,
they clearly manage it well if that's her story.
Yeah,
about it.
We don't suggest doing this with your trauma, but if you're in a place where you can, I mean, then, or that works for you, I mean, wow.
If you could be it in a Monday CBS Monday Night of the Movies. Like back then, those made-for-TV movies all had names. They had their own opening graphics.
Yeah.
Like, and it was a thing that got promoted all week long. Like this was appointment TV.
Yes.
It was one of your four choices. And they're just like, I pick this one.
It's on YouTube. This. Watch 5 minutes of it and you'll know what we grew up on.
This inspiring story.
Yeah. So yeah. Teresa then goes on to have a steady acting career, appearing in the 1984 Charles Bronson film, The Evil That Men Do, and in guest roles on several television series. in the early 1990s, she lands a starring role in the television series The Commish. Mm-hmm. Remember that? As Rachel Scully? The wife of the police commissioner, Tony Scully, played by Michael Chiklis. Classic actor.
And not to be confused by mine and Gareth Reynolds' TV show, The Commissioner.
Oh, yeah, which is I forgot about that.
A totally different idea.
I forgot all about
Similar,
that.
Similar, not the same.
That's right.
Yeah. She the goes Commissioner on... was actually a good TV
it
show.
It was classic. My mom totally watched that. Yeah.
Yeah.
She also goes on to write a memoir about her attack called Beyond Survival. And she becomes an advocate for others who have suffered a violent crime by founding a support group called Victims for Victims. As a result of Teresa's efforts and the 1989 murder of actress Rebecca Schaefer by an obsessed fan, California passes the nation's first anti-stalking law in 1990. So that's, I mean, that's how long it took for anyone to fucking admit that that's a crime.
Long overdue, but, you know, first steps.
That's right. Then on September 13th, 1994, the federal law called Violence Against Women Act of 1994 is signed by then President Bill Clinton. The act provides $1.6 billion towards investigation and prosecution of violent crimes against women, imposed automatic and mandatory restriction on those convicted, and allowed civil redress in cases prosecutors chose not, in which they chose not to prosecute the case. So you can then be like, fuck you, I'm taking this up higher. The act also established the Office of Violence Against Women within the Department of Justice. So finally, by 1994, it's being taken a little more seriously. The bill was sponsored by a certain Delaware senator named Joseph Biden.
Oh.
Yeah, I didn't know that. And gained support from a broad coalition of advocacy groups. The act passed through both houses of the Congress with bipartisan support in 1994. Although the following year, the House Republicans attempted to cut the act's funding. Many of those grant programs that were authorized in the act have been funded by the U.S. Congress. The Office on Violence Against Women have received appropriations from Congress for things like grants to encourage arrest and enforce protection orders, court training and improvement grants, research on violence against Native American women, national tribal sex offender registries, stalker reduction database, protections and services for disabled victims, and violence on college campuses grants. So they're trying to cover, you know, really specific issues that in and of themselves are delicate and take a lot of care and effort. But of course, even 25 years later, we're still a long way from stalking victims having adequate rights and protection. So in a January 2009 National Crime Victimization Survey said that during a 12-month period, an estimated 14 in every 1,000 persons aged 18 or older were victims of stalking. Nearly 54% of female victims and 41% of male victims experienced stalking before the age of 25. And an estimated 5.9 million U.S. residents age 18 or older experienced behaviors consistent with either stalking or harassment.
Ugh.
So while the federal government, all 50 states, the District of Columbia and U.S. territories have enacted criminal laws to address stalking, the legal definition for stalking varies across all the jurisdictions. In 2000, the National Center for Victims of Crime partnered with the U.S. Department of Justice Office on Violence Against Women to create the Stalking Resource Center, SRC. And that's you can go to victimconnect.org and victimsofcrime.org to find the protection orders and national hotlines if you need help with that. So then there's a woman called Tamara Hill. She is a YouTube personality, and she's an internationally and board certified trauma therapist and licensed child and family therapist. I would highly suggest going to her YouTube page. That's T-A-M-A-R-A Hill. She covers a lot of topics, including and related to stalking, trauma, and psychotherapy. So it's youtube.com/Tamara H Therapist. So if you need any information or help, she's a really great resource.
Oh, nice.
As for Teresa Saldana, she passed away in 2016 at Cedars-Sinai of pneumonia at the age of 61. Oh. And the man who heroically came to her aid, the delivery man, he switched careers after the ordeal and he became what he always wanted to be, a police officer. Can you even?
That's crazy.
I know.
So like, he had that thing in him of like, emergency, I go.
I run towards the problem.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
All right. So then finally, I looked, of course, this story up on our Gmail account to see if anyone had written in about it. And there weren't a lot, surprisingly, but one murderino named Katie wrote in. And here's what she said. She said, I'm writing in to y'all today to tell you about an incredible woman that I am proud to say I knew as a little girl growing up. When I was about 8 years old at one of my first ballet schools in L.A., I met this mother and daughter duo whom over the years we always seem to have left and changed over to the same ballet schools one after the other. When I first saw and met her mother, I was instantly intrigued and thought of her as such an interesting person and character. She was unlike anyone I had ever come across before. She always wore very long and flowy dresses, and she also always wore a hat that cast a shadow over her face. While you had to sort of peek under the hat to see her face, I always remember thinking how beautiful she was. Her garments were always in the darker tones and hues, but the brightness of her spirit and personality were always gleaming through. I cannot quite remember how it came about that my mother revealed to me who she was, but I'm 99% sure it was in the car where all our serious and almost always inappropriate for my age type conversations occurred. My mom revealed to me that my ballet friend's mother was a pretty famous actress in the 1980s and 90s and is basically the reason why California became the first state in the U.S. to criminalize stalking.
Wow.
She could have easily gone into retreat after such a heinous and traumatic attack, which no one could ever fault anyone for doing, but she didn't. She went out and used her trauma to bring awareness to something that I was shocked to find out wasn't always illegal. It is crazy to me that before the 1990s, it was totally okay, apparently, to follow someone around because you're obsessed with them. She experienced many health complications due to her attack, but that too never stopped her from continuing her acting career, from taking her daughter to every single one of her ballet classes and to every one of our rehearsals, and definitely never stopped her from being a loving and supportive mother and friend, not only to her daughter, but to me as well. She even nicknamed me the baby ballerina. She was truly a great lady, and I often think about her and her daughter. And that is the story of Teresa Saldana.
Oh, I love that ending, like a personal, I knew her personally.
Yeah.
Like I got to know her as a person. That's
and her
very
spirit
touching.
Shone through. It wasn't that lovely email. Thank you, Kate.
That's so lovely.
Yeah.
That was, it's such a cool story because the amount of strength and resilience it would take. I mean, that idea, what she went through and the stages of what she went through, because the stalking itself is so scary.
Oh.
You know what I mean? And then it's just like, it's really impressive. It's just always, there's nothing like a survivor story because there's something in that it's just like, you know, the attack is so horrible. The story, you know, the details of what she went through after that.
Yeah.
And then she just continued to like fight back and then start fighting for other people. It's just like, that's like an A+ survivor story.
Yeah.
She's the OG really.
Yeah.
Because that's like one of the first ones I ever saw. And it was to watch a made for TV movie like that as a like adolescent.
Yeah.
It was really shocking and really like, wait, this can happen.
Totally.
And then the point of the story was it can happen and you can then take it back.
Yeah.
And she was kind of like there front and center to be saying that. It's amazing. That's an incredible work she did in her life.
Definitely. We all owe her a debt of gratitude.
And then went on to like to star on a very popular TV show. It wasn't just like, she's a true badass.
Totally. Totally.
The commissioner, for God's sake.
I know.
It was on for like 8 years.
Yeah.
And she was like, She did it.
Yeah. So really incredible and gives us all hope. And let's all carry some of her tenacity in our bones.
Yeah. So cool.
Yeah.
I love that. It made me immediately think of the Rebecca Schaefer story too, because that stalker also got her information by hiring a private detective.
Yes.
It was like very common, no big deal.
Wasn't it also he called the DMV too?
Yes.
And that they made laws that the DMV cannot, because they could just, You could just call and be like, hey, I'm a bail bondsman and I need the information for this person who's jumped bail or whatever.
This person's address or whatever.
Yeah.
I know. It's so creepy. Those kinds of things where it's like, what things are set up just based on like if it had to have happened already.
Totally. We can't do anything. Until
the bad hit hasn't happened.
Yeah.
It's just so backwards. It is so backwards. Also, just the idea, just from the beginning of that story, it's just like this was a person who had real mental disorder.
Yes.
And the idea that it was just like, and then his choice to never address it, to never get help.
Yes. To continue never, his actions.
And to, feel almost entitled to be able to act that way is really, it's that in and of itself was really something, because it's like so many things could be solved if people could just, instead of being like, you know what I'm gonna do is violence, where it's like, all right, or you could talk to someone, you could maybe see if you could get on a pill that would make you stop wanting, like,
totally.
Anyway, I'm a dreamer. The idea that people would just go to therapy and work on their shit.
I mean, if only. Well, should we
do some fucking hoorays?
Let's fucking do it.
All right. You want to go ahead?
Okay. This is from Alien Ned. A-L-I-A-N Ned from Instagram. My fucking hooray is a small victory. I had the overwhelming desire. Sir, what?
Could the name be like Aileen?
Aileen D. Alien Ned. A-L-I-A. Allie and Ned. It's Allie and Ned. And there's a couple in the photo.
This is
Allie and Ned. What's up?
It's just like the game concentration.
Oh my God, it is. I'm so bad.
Amazing.
At it.
Good job. You sounded it out. You stuck with it. Great job.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. My fucking Alien Ned.
This is from Alien Ned.
Alien Ned. Alien. My fucking hooray is a small victory. I had the overwhelming desire to cancel my virtual therapy appointment so that I could avoid working on myself and maybe take a 3-hour depression nap instead. Mm-hmm. Been there. I've not been doing so well lately. I fought the impulse to avoid and ignore, which is the loudest voice in my depression, and attended my session. I'm glad I did, because fuck you, depresh. I needed it, and I am worth it. Congratulations, nice. Allie and or Ned. That's awesome.
That is actually humongous. Uh-huh. And that's the kind of thing. And yes, we've all been there for sure. But the more you fight that impulse, and I'm saying this as a person who often does not, mm-hmm. but like fighting that impulse and doing, what do they call, like opposite behavior?
Yeah.
And like doing the thing you don't want to do, which is like the stronger choice.
Yeah.
Is the key to life. Just little tiny improvements like that will get you everywhere in this world.
That's so true. I need to do
Alien
that.
Alien Ned, I'm proud of you. Keep it up. Okay, so this says, this is Mia Jacobson 21. My fucking hooray is that this year I'm graduating college. I got into my dream school and I got into my dream vet school. Oh. And I'm celebrating my 3-year remission from cancer. I was diagnosed freshman year of college, went through surgery and 6 months of chemotherapy, and then went back to school as soon as I could. Whoa. I'm blown away. Yeah. Although the trauma of having cancer as a young adult is something I constantly have to work through, I'm so proud that I've been able to accomplish so much over the past few years. Thank you for always being there and talking so openly about dealing with trauma. I can't wait to listen to you as I walk to my vet school classes in the fall. Oh. Fucking hooray.
Yay.
Unbelievable.
Congratulations. Gosh. On all fronts.
Couldn't get through school with every goddamn advantage. And like the idea that they went through school.
Yeah.
And got cancer, recovered from cancer.
Yeah.
Went into remission and then went back to school
as soon as possible. I would have used it as an excuse to not.
Yes,
but that's incredible.
Course. built in.
Yeah. Not an excuse. I mean, rightfully so.
Well, as a reason, yeah. But I would have used it as an excuse of just like, hey, can you bring me some? just milking it for years afterwards. Uh-huh.
Okay. This is from _cube on Instagram. Got a fucking hooray for y'all. You all. Yeah. I put the y'all in. I spent 7 years in a quote stable career after college that had severe impacts on my mental health. I stayed because I thought that's what I needed to do, but I felt trapped, miserable, and unqualified to do anything else. Last year, I read SSDGM, and with a lot of inspiration from you fine ladies and encouragement from a few best friends, I quit that job, went back to school, and today, less than a year later, all caps, I got hired as a graphic designer.
Nice.
I've never been this proud of myself or cried happy tears until I called my mom to tell her I did it. So fucking hooray, I'm a badass who's taking what she wants in this shit show world. Fucking hooray. Yes. Is that rad? A year. That's incredible. Like, you could be a year away from your dream job if you just decide what you want to do in this year. This next year is the deciding factor between right now and 365 days from now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Me too. Me too. I just realized.
Hey. Also, graphic designer is, one of the coolest jobs there is. The coolest. It's very cool.
Definitely.
You get to be an artist, but you also, it's straight up business. Like, people need you.
Yeah. It's art. It's business. It's scientific in a lot of ways. It's like.
It's the coolest. That's a very cool job. Congratulations.
Yes, you did
and
it.
Good work.
That's fucking
You did
right.
your work.
Yes.
Okay. This is from 4N6B mod.
That's not real. Is that a bot?
4N6B mod.
Sound it out.
I'm trying to, like, this is like, yeah, driver's license plate, a license plate game. 4N6B mod. Nope. No. Okay.
4N6.
I had a big fucking hooray today. I volunteered at my state's first mass vaccination clinic. It was the first time in over a year that I felt that joyful energy you can only get from being in a crowd of people that are experiencing true happiness, like a concert, but with needles and allergy observations. I even had a gentleman tell me he loved me in that way that seems so genuine, recognizing a moment of lovely connection with a stranger. And it's just about the humanity of it all. My empath self soaked it all up. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful break from COVID anxiety and depression. We managed over 500 vaccinations per hour and over 12,000 vaccination in 3 days.
Holy shit.
I can't wait to help with the next one. Let's get those shots in arms.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Hey, I want to.
That's so great. But also, that reminds me, Kurt Brownaller has been posting on Instagram this. So it's called Get Out the Shot LA. And I'm sure it happens in other towns as well, where if you volunteer to work, you know, 8 hours or however long at a vaccination location, you're eligible for the shot as well.
Yeah, you get it.
Right.
They give it to you automatically. Yeah.
This one's gotsla.org, but look up your town and see if there's something similar, because that could be really great for people who need it but aren't on the immediate list, and a really cool way to, like, volunteer. Okay, this is my last one. It's from Jordan.Motzinger. I think I got that right. My fucking hooray is finally able to be shared. I've waited so long to be able to say that after a long, indescribably emotional journey, we brought home our adopted baby 2 weeks ago. While we never want to see a family broken up, especially if an expectant mother would be able to parent with ample support and resources, we pray to be able to stand in a space where we were needed. We pray to be able to stand in a space where we were needed and join arms with an expectant mother to love, support, and serve her. Our son's birth mother is a beautiful, compassionate, outrageously strong woman, and we love her endlessly. Our family has not only grown by adding our son, but also by adding his bio family. If you read this on the pod, please share that the adoption community needs ethical advocates for all members of the triad, not just adoptive families and children, but also the birth mothers and fathers. We named our son Merritt because it means worthy, and he is all that and more.
Congratulations.
Isn't that beautiful? Like, that's such
it's a lovely
adaptation.
Message. And yeah. It's, yeah. But at the same time, it's also just like, you have a little family.
I know.
That's so lovely.
A big,
what an exciting thing.
A big growing family. That's lovely.
Yeah. All right. Here's my last one. It says, fucking hooray. It's never too late to advocate for yourself. Hmm. And this is from Tizzy. It says, I've always had issues with reading, writing, spelling, and math. As I progressed through school, I hid my struggles because I didn't want others to think that I wasn't capable or stereotype me as, quote, another child of color who couldn't read. I started to figure out little shortcuts to get by, but my studies eventually outpaced my ability to adapt. I did research some years ago and talked to some of my friends that specialized in dyslexia. I seemed to have an unofficial answer, but that wasn't satisfying enough. It wasn't until recently that I was able to afford a proper evaluation. And then in parentheses, it says, side note, they're expensive, an average of $2,000, which raises questions of equity, among other things.
Yeah.
But I digress. Very true. End parentheses. Come to find out, I don't have dyslexia, but a visual processing disorder. Basically, my brain has trouble processing input from my eyes, which causes my brain to flip and mirror letters, move the words on the page, make solving math equations difficult, and can even affect depth perception. Oh. My brain will also skip lines and omit words or notes altogether when reading books and sheet music. At 29 years old and 1.5 semesters into a PhD program for music education, I finally have an answer and will get the academic accommodations that I need.
Oh.
Stay sexy and never stop advocating for yourself. Safira. And then it says, it's Jewish, LOL.
I'm about to cry and now I'm laughing. Oh my God.
Isn't that the fucking greatest? Okay, first of all, with all of that,
You're still
in a PhD program.
Yeah.
Like all of that problems, like clearly they adapted well enough to get themselves
yes, you're brilliant.
Very far in life.
And it's
very
like
far
you're
life.
Brilliant. And then the American school system's way of teaching and way of how you have to learn doesn't work for everyone. So you're still incredibly smart and your workaround. It's like,
wow.
Probably makes you way more intelligent than just, you know, the
average
bear.
But it's such
bear.
A good point of like that kind of testing should be available to all children,
yeah.
Not just rich kids.
No.
Because kids should know if you're having problems reading or if you're having problems in school.
Yeah.
It could very possibly could not be your fault.
Totally.
And it's not about your concentration or anything like that.
Yeah. You're stupid or something. Oh, my God.
Stupid, which is a self-esteem thing, or it turns into like a behavioral issue because you're, you know, like there's all kinds of ways that goes wrong where it's like, you know.
Well, I say stupid in that when I was a kid, I had some learning issues too, and I just thought I was stupid because it didn't fit. Everyone else could understand the basic way.
Right.
So it made me think I was stupid and I didn't try.
It's a scary feeling.
Yeah. So hearing
Amazing.
That and that she's 29, it's like it's never
too late to stop advocating.
That's
for yourself.
Right. Amazing. You guys send in your fucking arrays on Instagram, on Twitter. There's a fan cult forum where you can put it in. You can email it to us. I think social media and fan cult's best, but also respond to each other and congratulate everyone for their fucking badassery. And
I mean, there's great stuff.
Yeah.
Great stuff going on out there. Oh, I'll mention this because I just remembered it right now. It happened almost like over a week ago. But, you know, there's this uptick in racially motivated attacks on Asian people these days.
Yes.
And it's in the news. It's happening a lot. It's very disturbing.
Yeah.
It's really upsetting. And they reached out on Twitter, see if it's going to find the name for us, and said that there were Asian people that were in New York City who were talking about being worried about walking around, like that it was that worrisome on a murderino forum somewhere. And all these murderinos started volunteering to walk people where they needed to go.
I mean, it's awful that it has to happen that way, but incredible.
Someone, like the first one I saw, because they included like a picture in their post that mm-hmm. they sent to me. And the first one was like somebody saying, I'm a martial arts instructor. I'll walk you anywhere you need to go.
Yes.
The person who tweeted it at us was at Gene Kim with three N's.
Gene Kim. And can you see that first one? Can you see the name of the... I think they said they were a martial arts instructor or something along those lines. It's in the picture of the thing she posted that she was looking at, like the forum.
Oh,
picture.
The name is blocked out in that.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. I just want to give that person a little credit. But apparently there were, I think she says in the tweet, right, Stephen, that there's like 50 people or 60 people that offered to walk any 48. Asian that felt 48 people, murderinos, offered to walk any Asian person who felt unsafe being by themselves on the street. Whereas it's like, this is the best thing. And I just wrote back, I love this and it doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, it's awful, but murderinos, once again, are the best fucking people.
Yeah, just we've all got to unite.
Yeah.
We got to unite against that bullshit. That's not cool.
Fuck yeah.
All right. That was a great episode.
Yeah, that was fun. Good job.
Good times.
Good job to all of us.
Good job to Georgia for handling the story this
Thank
week.
You.
Good job to all of us for being here
Karen.
With her and for her.
Thanks for listening. You guys are the best, as I just said.
You are really, I think you personally are among our top 10 favorite
listeners.
Definitely. Yes, you.
And your
no,
sister.
You.
Oh, me?
You. Oh. No, not you. Stay sexy.
And don't get murdered. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Elvis, do you want a cookie?